Hey, this is Dominique Henderson, your CFP on YouTube, guiding you to a career in financial services. This episode originally aired on my YouTube channel, which you can find at www.youtube.com/theYouTubeCFP. Make sure you join me each week as I share with you information on how to become a financial professional and the things you should be considering as you navigate down this career path. Without further ado, here's this week's episode. What are the guidelines around what you can and cannot say as a financial professional? Let's talk about that and more. Get the pen and paper out.
Number one rule of Wall Street. Nobody, I don't care if you're Warren Buffett or if you're Jimmy Buffett, nobody knows if a stock is gonna go up, down, sideways, or in.
So for those of you that already don't know, that clip of course was from The Wolf of Wall Street, and that one line where he says, no one knows if a stock is going up or down, I just totally agree with that. And although we know that this is just entertainment, that the stock market and the financial industry is usually nothing like how Hollywood portrays it, Matthew McConaughey's character has a really, really great point here. And I think it almost dovetails into this question that I got from Dan's Chess Lounge. And he basically is saying here that he didn't really know that it was going to be like this. And so I thought, why not talk about what you can and cannot say? You know, I think I have a good idea after 20 years of doing this, what you can and cannot say, and maybe some of the pitfalls that you might run into, or some of the questions that a client or prospective client may have for you, and you want to watch what you say when they ask those particular questions. I guarantee, I'm sure that, always or never. Just avoid all those phrases. You may say something, I'm sure that I love you as a client, or I always love working with you. I would never do anything to mislead you. That's how you can use those phrases. But generally speaking, when you put those phrases in front of investment performance, or how the markets will perform, or outcomes of the market, or even the fact of you're certain that their financial future will do X, Y, and Z, all these things are misleading to the prospective client. And that's a term that if you go down the CFP road or any other professional designation, they're going to get really, really sticky and particular around you misleading the client with you having more information. So the fact of the matter is, worst case scenario is somebody's gonna sue you for you not delivering on what you guaranteed them, since we're certainty-driven beings. You know, a human beings love certainty. We love to know at least what our downside is. You know, upside could be, you know, kind of sketchy, but we at least want to know that we're not going to lose this amount of money or whatnot. We're just very wired like that. So that being said, what you have to do is avoid giving certainty around outcomes if you don't know what those outcomes are going to be. What you would want to do is try to craft the narrative, or however you're working with that person, to kind of dig down to see why they need to be so certainty driven about this particular thing. You know, maybe they had a past where their money story is kind of telling them that they have to have at least this amount of money if they're never going to go into the poorhouse. And you can probably, you know, pretty clearly illustrate with math that that's not going to be the case without using the term certainty. So just avoid what I would call over-promising and under-delivering, and you're probably going to be okay in this area. Okay, so there's something else you want to avoid. The client's assets that I placed in XYZ fund performed like this, and they're going to do the same for you, or some, you know, version of that. In my opinion, and there's a lot of scrutiny around this, and I'm not a securities lawyer, I'm not a compliance attorney, I'm not any of those things, but in my opinion, the reason why there's so much of scrutiny around the 1940 Act that governs investment advice and investment advisors is because of the word investment. That's the main reason. So look at it from this way. When you register with the SEC or any other state that you have jurisdiction in to do business, you're going to register as a registered investment advisor, right? If you're independent. If you are with a broker-dealer, they're going to register with FINRA, the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority, and you're going to be a registered representative under them. So you're still in the same umbrella. Here's the point. As a registered representative of a broker-dealer, or as a independent advisor representative of a RIA, a registered investment advisor, you're basically in the same hat, and the regulations fall to you the same way. In the scrutiny being around what you say around investment advice. Investment advisor representative, notice that word investment in front of advisor. Now, if it was something like financial advice, now that's something for a whole nother day, but the point is, around that investment advice is where the scrutiny comes. So my advice, just so you're never caught up in a headline or an SEC audit or a review of your advertising and marketing that shows that you've been giving advice on investments, I would say just avoid these altogether in a public format where you're giving specific advice to a client. Now, if you're giving generic advice like the markets did X and Y, and here are some things you may want to consider in your investment portfolio based on what the markets are doing, that's something totally different. That's generic. That's not to one specific person. But if you're giving investment advice to one specific person about telling them what your clients did and this is what they should do, That's a very, very gray line that you don't want to toe. And so what I would say is avoid those altogether. Maybe consider being a financial professional that does not give investment advice. You can be more like Kramer and be on CNBC. And you can kind of say all the colorful things that you want because you have no licenses. Thanks for taking the time with me today to listen. Just one quick question before we continue. Have you subscribed to my YouTube channel yet? If you haven't, I want to give you just one more reason to subscribe. Each week, I'm going to be sharing what I've learned in 20 plus years in the industry so that you can reach your goals faster. How's that? Now back to this week's episode. And false and misleading information. Now, this is something we learned about a lot as I studied for the CFP designation. And here's the gist of it. The gist of the rule is it's about fairness. Do you think it's fair that if you were a lightweight and a lightweight boxer to get in the ring with a heavyweight boxer that has 20 more years experience than you? No, that would not be fair. That fight would be pretty much fixed and you would probably come out in a lot of pain. That's the gist of the rule around fairness, the fairness doctrine with the CFP, in that, you know, as an investment professional, we are trained and we have a lot more experience than the average Joe in most instances. And to use our information in a manipulative or leveraged manner in order to make you make a decision that we have more information about and you have less information about is not fair. And it could be construed as misleading if you use information or facts that the client may not understand because you throw a whole lot of jargon in there. And so the idea around this is just don't do it. Just don't do it. It's not fair. It's not ethical. It's not moral. And you can be fined a lot of money for it and be banned for the industry. So those are a lot of things. You don't want to tarnish your reputation. You don't want to ruin somebody else's financial future just to make a quick buck. You know, the idea around fairness is just so that everybody has the same playing field. And literally speaking, you know, somebody with 20 years of experiences like myself, we're never going to be on the same level playing field. So I always have to ask questions and I always have to find out where the client is and where their level of experience is and where their level of knowledge is so that they can be explained the full scope of what's going to happen in the relationship and the engagement so that they can enter into that engagement what they call an arm's length transaction. So both sides have the same amount of information, and what I know or what I am withholding for them being misleading or manipulative is not influencing the decision that they make. So that's the whole idea around fairness. Just don't do it. I think these are the things most financial professionals can agree that you don't need to say, you don't need to do as a financial advisor if you want to have a long career. Now, to Dan's question about how you would actually promote yourself, I think you have to get creative around this. Now, typically speaking, and I'm going to step on a ton of toes here, but if you go just to the biggest firms, the largest Wall Street firms, all the way down to small businesses like myself, there's going to be a lot of scrutiny at the higher level than at the lower level. And that's just because when you have a lot of people in a firm, you know, thousands of reps, you have to manage to the lowest common denominator. You can't expect that everybody's going to do the greatest thing. And then you got that one apple that spoils the barrel. And then the next thing you know, firm XYZ, Wall Street firm XYZ gets fined millions of dollars just because of what this one rep said. So you're going to typically have, you know, the fisticuffs. they're going to be really, really tight around those firms. And so you either have to find a happy medium with the compliance department in order to advertise and promote your services in a way that's going to allow you to grow your book of business, or you have to decide to break away from that and do something on a smaller scale without the resources possibly and without the name recognition, But in exchange for that, what you get to do is you get to personally brand yourself to the clients you want to serve. That's the road I chose. A lot of advisors have chosen that road and been successful. A lot of advisors have chosen the road of a big bank and been successful. It just depends on what is right for you. I would love to know, are there any things that you have heard financial professionals, Jim Cramer excluded, say that cause you to maybe scratch your head and say, is that true? Is that real? Leave those down in the comments. I would love to take a look at those and hopefully be able to clarify where I can. Worst case, it provides the community with some really great entertainment. Talk to you later. Bye-bye, guys. Well, that wraps up this week's episode, and I hope you were able to glean at least one takeaway that will help you on your path. You know what? I'd really love to hear what it was that I said that may have helped you. Feel free to drop me an email at info@djh-capital.com. That's info@djh-capital.com. One last thing, my friend. It would really help the podcast if you would leave a review on the platform that you're enjoying it on. I'd really appreciate it, and it will help more financial professionals like yourself find out about what we're doing here. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.